You're watching Single Process with Joe and Bob. We've created this video series to help you navigate the difficult process of divorce, and we hope this helps you on your journey. Our episode today is on the role of the guardian ad litem in divorce.
Yeah. Never even heard of a guardian ad litem, which, well, that's a good thing.
It's a good thing because it sounds like you didn't need to involve anybody else in the decisions around your kids. But for a lot of people, you know, if they're not agreeing on the kids, they've got to find a representative, somebody who can objectively say what the kids need and speak up for them.
Yeah, because kids totally can get lost in the divorce process through all the arguing and debating. So I agree.
Well, let's find out more about it.
Well, luckily, we have Jill Plancher with us today. Jill Plancher is a former federal and state prosecutor who currently works as a volunteer for Connecticut Legal Services. She is a guardian ad litem, which means she represents issues of custody and divorce dispute on behalf of children. So thank
Welcome,
you for being
Jill.
With us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
So start us off and tell us, what is a guardian ad litem, for Barbara's sake?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Right. So a guardian ad litem is appointed by the court, as you said, in situations where parents cannot reach a consensus about what is in their own child or children's best interest. And so the court believes that there needs to be a neutral third party appointed to represent the children's best interest before the court. The guardian is a fact witness for the court, so the guardian will actually testify at a trial or hearing with regard to issues facing the family. The guardian is often a lawyer, but doesn't have to be a lawyer, and the guardian will not exercise sort of the usual and typical and customary things that a lawyer will do before a court. A guardian will not, for example, file motions, question or cross-examine witnesses. The guardian is actually going to testify about what's in a child's best interest.
So go back to this. So how do you even know you need a guardian ad litem? Are you in process of divorce and a judge realizes that the kids are not being protected in some way?
It happens in a couple of different ways. Very often what happens is someone, one of the parents, will file an action for divorce or a petition for custody.
Okay.
And in that situation, often, most of the time, over 80% of the time actually, parents will reach a resolution about what's in their children's best interest, and they won't need a guardian at all. But in those 20% or so of cases where there's a lot of conflict over what's best for the kids, where they're going to live, who's going to be making major decisions about them, in those situations, either or both parents will file a motion for the appointment of a guardian ad litem, or the court will on its own, or sua sponte in the language of the court, the Latin language, will appoint a guardian for the children. So it can happen at the beginning of a case, in the middle of a case. It can also happen even after a case is resolved.
Do you see that a lot? Do you see that in like custody issues post-divorce?
I do. I'm often appointed as a guardian in a post-judgment proceeding. So, for example, parents could reach an agreement and things could work more or less while the children are younger. Then the kids hit those preteen years and there's
everything
a lot
changes,
of conflict.
Yeah, right?
That
everything
happens all
changes.
The time.
And some of it's an organic change and some of it is because parents have reached different moments in their lives. They've met a new partner, things like that.
Give us some examples of where a guardian is appointed. What kind of issues are people trying to resolve?
So in the seriously contested cases that I'm appointed in, there are issues, there are serious issues with regard to the mental health of the parents. Or there could be some special needs issues with regard to the children that require different kind of parenting. And so it sort of raises the level of conflict. There's often allegations of substance abuse, alcohol and other substance abuse, and domestic violence. So in those three types of cases, mental health, substance abuse, and domestic violence, guardians are often appointed because it's very difficult to resolve cases like that because
so it's
there's
not a
so
maneuver.
Much distrust.
It's not like the, you know, one spouse gets wrangled by the other and wants this guardian appointed just to fight on their behalf.
Well, you know, I can't say definitively that that does not happen. I try not to get involved in cases where I feel that a parent or both parents are using the process in a strategic way.
Yeah.
Because then, as a guardian, you are really participating in this bad behavior.
Yeah, that's bad behavior.
And you want to stay out of it. So tell us what the process looks like once you're appointed. Do you go visit the home? Do you talk to the children? What does that look
like? So all of the above. When I'm appointed as a guardian, and when most people are, there are best practices that one would follow. I always start by meeting with the parents before meeting with children because I want to understand the concerns that they have and I want to know their children from their point of view. You know, And then I will meet with children always in their homes. So I will go, if they've already separated, I will make sure to meet the kids in both mom's home and dad's home and try to make sure that it's a balanced meeting so that I'll do that on many occasions. Once I get to know kids and we have a good rapport, I will meet with them in my office. But until then, I meet with them in their space so they feel comfortable.
These kids really tell you what's going on? I have to think kids are kind of protecting their parents and not giving you the real scoop.
That's an interesting question. I think, based on my experiences, that children are really grateful to have a safe space to share their concerns.
Aww.
They are also concerned about whether or not that information will be shared with their parents.
Yes, yes, I would imagine.
I would worry about that too.
Now, so it's really important for kids to understand straight up, depending on their age, of course, mm-hmm. that as a guardian, I am not a confidential source.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not a privileged communication. I will be asked questions about the child's preference. I will be asked questions about what the child is experiencing. And a lot of that comes from my interactions with the child and also seeing the child with the parent, because mm-hmm. I do try to do that as well. So the kids need to know from the start that it's not a privileged conversation. But I will tell the children and the parents that if there's something the child really wants to keep confidential, I'm going to really try to keep it confidential unless I believe it's important to share.
Yeah.
And does this keep the kids out of court? Does this
great
stop
question.
Them being
yes.
interviewed in court and putting
you always hear
that?
It's so bad to put a kid on the stand.
Right.
Connecticut is incredibly protective of the children. So there is not a judge that I've appeared before who will allow a child to be brought into court to testify. I have had one situation with a 17-year-old child who wanted to speak directly to the judge. And in that case, I was not a guardian. I was the attorney for that child.
Okay.
And so I asked the court for permission for my client to speak directly to the judge. But he was 17, and the judge permitted it. But
okay.
it's very rare. Yes, a guardian stands in the shoes of the children and speaks on behalf of the children, but is not actually just advocating what the child wants, is also advocating what's in their best interest.
It sounds like a great objective overview, you know, for the court to have this perspective in difficult situations.
And who's paying for you?
Well, in situations where parents have means, the parents are paying. And the court makes a decision based on the parents' financial affidavits mm-hmm. about how that's going to be apportioned.
Okay.
In most situations, it's apportioned equally. And that's done also to ensure that neither parent believes that the guardian is, because of finances, biased toward one or the other parent. But in situations where the parents don't have means, and there's a statutory construct for this, then the appointment is pro bono. So I will be doing the work without charging.
Hence your volunteer work. So to sum up, if a parent has a dispute over custody, child welfare that they cannot resolve on their own or through attorneys, then they can petition the court to appoint a GAL.
That's correct.
Okay.
Perfect. Such great
perfect.
Information.
Really good. Thank you, Jill.
Absolutely.
Thank
of course.
You very much for joining
of course.
Us today.
For more information on guardian ad litem and protecting your children in the courts, visit singleprocess.me.